Hello and welcome to The Lineup, presented by True Blue LA, presented by... I'm always afraid to say a sponsor there because I don't know, like, I don't want to get sued.
Right.
So I have to, like, make up a business, and then I'm not good at that. Something
Thermodynamics, yeah. I believe. A subsidiary of Globex. Yeah.
Jarmer Fawn. Proud. Supporter of this podcast. So, you know, we've got kind of, I think, the sort of standard slate of right before spring training off-season news.
Oh, you thought the Dodgers were done making moves? I don't think so.
I mean, I thought they were done making, you know, super impactful moves.
You're probably right. Yeah. Still.
But you know what? I think they made some impactful moves. How about that?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Joe West. That's so exciting.
Yeah. Like, there's a Dodger tie-in. It's fun.
So we'll talk about that. And then we've got some questions from Craig. All of that after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had a friend message me on Slack Monday, so a couple days ago, saying, I forget his exact words, but it was something to the kin of, this extra innings rule is, let's see, I'm going to quote, terrible, right? I thought I was going to break the... the parental guidance rule
I'm
for the first time.
The guy who,
yeah,
who
I don't think don't no. I think I have once.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to have to again, but he said terrible, and I explained it would be so funny, many words. Yes.
It'd be funny if the one time you broke it, you were quoting me. Like, that would be
my kind of take on this. Is that baseball purists?
It's poopy.
Absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
Middle, you know, maybe someone that's a pretty big but not huge fan. Doesn't really like it, especially if your team is away. And then super casual fans are indifferent to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really like it, but it's like this very blunt instrument to sort of get an inelegant job done that almost doesn't need doing, but it affects such a small amount of games. They're trying to remove, like, I think, was it maybe Jay Jaffe wrote about this? I forget who sort of made the point where it's like, it's trying to like solve this very tiny problem, they're trying to eliminate all randomness out of baseball, basically.
And it's one of those, I think I can speak for you and say one of the reasons why, other than the fact that it just is awkward and unintuitive to start with a runner on base, it eliminates one of those rare outcomes where once a season there's this 18 inning or 20 inning game, and those little things that happen only a little often are what make baseball so kind of wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's just a very, I think, as you said, a blunt instrument and just sort of inelegant solution to it.
I tend to not like it for maybe the not so much a direct reason, but so the sort of stats on it, I looked it up, 2018, 2019, before the, you know, old rules, or this was during the old rules, before the new rules came in, extra inning game was over by 11 innings, so two extra innings, 69% of the time. Now, since 2020, it's gone three seasons with the runner on second rule and extras, the games end within two extra innings 92% of the time. So you're basically eliminating the super long game for the most part. But the main reason they always use is because it doesn't, like, they don't want to, like, tax a team so much where that it necessitates, like, you know, you got to call up like two pitchers because you used everybody. But I don't like the way teams use pitchers generally. Like, they're They're always playing for nine innings. They're always going, having everyone go max out at all times. Like, and there's no, I don't know. I don't like it. I get frustrated because, well, now teams can't carry more than 13 pitchers, but there's been a lot of times where the Dodgers carrying like nine relievers and they still run out of pitchers. Like, how does that happen? Like, I think teams should, if you want to like have a blunt way to like force teams to act differently, make them keep playing, make them keep someone in reserve to use as a long man or whatever, and adjust your strategy. And then a lot of these rule changes, the other rule changes that they're trying to like tilt the balance back, have more balls in play. One way to do that is by having like a generally less dominant pitching staff. And like, if you're not having them go all out at, you know, 100% of all pitches, like that's one way to do it. I didn't want this to take up like 20 minutes, but my main theory on the extra inning rule, or what I wanted to talk about, was what do we call the extra runner?
Manfred,
because obviously, runner. Yeah, the Manfred man is pretty good, but there's also like, you know, it's commonly referred to as ghost runner, which is terrible, because player's not dead for one thing. No, I don't know. It's just weird. There's free runner. There's automatic runner. What is it? Well, I guess Manfred Mann, is that the leader in the clubhouse? What do you think?
I mean, I have always said, not always, but for a while now, said Manfred Runner. I haven't said Manfred Mann.
Yeah.
I'm not the punster that you subscribe to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
But you know, if it's especially because it's such an unpopular rule, I have no problem naming it after sure. the commissioner.
After the wildly popular,
MLB, we have Lawler's Law. There's plenty of things that enter the lexicon.
Wait, so let's say from now on, if the
not,
Dodgers,
and Lawler's Law is a lovely thing, not as
Lawler's
just,
Law
just
is,
to clear
is
that,
a, an
to
actual clear that up, scientifically to, proven law too, like
not we, a completely fair thing to compare.
First team to score 100 wins. So I think as a rule, in honor of Lawler's Law, any time the Dodgers score the runner, the free runner from second base in extra innings, we have to say bingo. I think that's the way to do it. So yeah, let's talk about some actual Dodgers news that wasn't extra inning related. I guess it could be at some point if they're.
I was about to go see if David Peralta has had any extra inning heroics against the Dodgers. Probably.
Oh, yeah,
probably.
Oh, so I didn't look this up, but I think it was Rowan Kavner. Last week when the Dodgers signed outfielder David Peralta.
I was just talking about David Peralta for no
just
reason.
Just randomly. Rowan Kavner was like, he said he was surprised that he had like a 700 OPS or something against the Dodgers, where it's like, you think it's like 1,000.
Yeah.
It just seems to be always in the mix. So yeah, 1 year, $6.5 million, like massive platoon split guy. Lefty hitter, hits righties really well. Had back surgery to repair a herniated disc in September because, you know, everyone is dealing with something. Pretty good defensively. He's also 35, so less so than he was like 2 years ago. Figures to be like the better end of a platoon in left field. So it kind of, since we recorded last, FanFest happened. There wasn't like a lot of newsworthy stuff there, but they just get to talk to a lot of people. And the general consensus was there's going to be quite a bit of like competition, like for playing time among Dodgers, like more than they're used to, at least in previous years.
Yeah,
but
last
like,
year especially, I remember our episode when we were talking about it, like, man, there's almost nothing. Everything
was
kind of
like,
set.
It was like Matt Beatty, like Andrew Rios, like, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, so the one thing that Dave Roberts mentioned where he was asked, this was again almost 2 weeks ago now, but like, who's your center fielder? He's like, I don't know. and then he just started naming guys. But so essentially they could end up with like platoons in both left and center field. You have like Chris Taylor, Trace Thompson, right-handed hitters. Peralta's a left-handed hitter. James Outman is a left-handed hitter. And then you have Jason Hayward, non-roster invitee. And then fellow non-roster invitee Bradley Zimmer, who hasn't really hit at all ever, but like is the by far the best defender of all of them and was used weirdly, like, or not weirdly, but he was used a lot as a defensive replacement last year. I don't know if you that's something they necessarily want to do, but like I'm just saying they have options. There's also Steven Duggar in there. But the competition is essentially like 4 to 5 guys for like 2 roster spots, basically, at this point. You know, Chris Taylor's going to be on the roster no matter what. Chase Thompson probably is, but he's still in that like competition zone. The weird thing with him too, he's going to miss some time because he's going to play for Great Britain in the World Baseball Classic, but I don't think they're expected to advance or anything, so he might only be gone like a week or so, but that's something to consider. But yeah, so that was like the on the higher end in terms of what the Dodgers added. This came on Friday, and I want to say I missed it at first. So last Friday I had to get my apartment bug sprayed, so I was like out of the apartment for like a good 8 hours. And I was sort of bouncing around, half running errands, half I blogged from like a Wendy's at some point that day because I wanted to get some work done. I just stopped in there because I could it easier to sit down. And then because it took longer than I expected, I had to be out longer. So I ended up going to a Panera, and I think I wrote about the David Peralta signing at that Panera. So I will forever associate him with tomato soup and Caesar salad, which is what I ate for dinner. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess it's not to say I didn't expect them to make moves. I sort of figured they would, add people, but they weren't done. On the next day, Saturday, they came to terms with Alex Reyes, who was the Cardinals, closer in 2021, but he also didn't pitch last year because he had shoulder surgery in May. It's only a 1-year, $1.1 million deal. There's a $3 million club option for 2024. You might remember Reyes as the pitcher who gave up the walk-off home run to Chris Taylor in the wild card game in 2021. Do. You do remember that. So he's expected to miss like the first 2 months of this year too. Still coming back from that shoulder thing. He was an all-star with the Cardinals. You know, you that's sort of grain of salt stuff like with relievers, but he was really good in a way. Like he very high strikeout rate guy, sort of good, like, you know, sort of misses barrels, that kind of a thing, but walks everybody. He had like the highest walk rate in 2020 and 2021 combined, 16%. Lots of injuries over the years. He's only pitched 159 innings in the last 6 years in both the majors and minors combined. But in a weird way, he's not the most recently injured pitcher the Dodgers also signed. We're recording this on February 15th, Wednesday, the first day of like pitchers and catchers reporting like to the full Dodgers camp. On Wednesday, Fabian Ardaia, I believe, was the first to note this, but you know, reporters are in the locker rooms there at spring training, and he saw Jimmy Nelson at his locker in the Dodgers clubhouse, which was new because he was a free agent. He has signed a reported 1-year, $1.2 million deal. That's basically like in line with each of his last 3 contracts for the most part. He's back with the Dodgers on a 4th straight 1-year deal. They declined a $1.1 million option on Nelson in November. He missed all of last season after Tommy John surgery and flexor tendon repair in August 2021. He was really awesome when he pitched in 2021 for the Dodgers. 186 ERA, 38% K rate. He only pitched 29 innings. And that's all he's pitched for the Dodgers in the 3 years he's been around. He had back surgery in 2020, missed all of 2022. Dating back to his time in Milwaukee, he had shoulder surgery there. He's only pitched 92 1/3 innings over the last 5 years. So The other thing about these signings, none of them are official as of the time we're recording yet. The Dodgers have a full 40-man roster, so they need to make corresponding moves. Now, it's not that big of a deal because today, when we're recording this, February 15th, it's also the day where the 60-day injured list can start to be used. The way the rule book works is you can't place a player on the 60-day DL, which opens up, you know, which doesn't count against the 40-man roster. But you can't do that until, like, the date that pitchers and catchers report, basically, to camp. And the CBA defines that as 43 days before opening day. That happens to be February 15th because this year opening day is March 30th. Dodgers have at least three pitchers who are, like, prime candidates for the 60-day. Blake Treinen, shoulder surgery in November. It was to repair his rotator cuff and torn labrum. So speaking with reporters on Wednesday, Treinen mentioned that his initial timetable when returning from his injury was, or from the surgery, was 10 months. And then he's like confident that would be September, right, if you're just gaming it out. But he feels confident he's going to pitch. Quote from Treinen, this is from Jack Harris, a story in the LA Times. I feel like I should be able to come back this year at some point. I think it's a very real possibility. It'd be really kind of a gut punch to me if I wasn't able to, et cetera, et cetera. Walker Buehler, we know he had Tommy John surgery last August, along with flexor tendon repair, the same duo that Jimmy Nelson had a year earlier. JP Feiereisen, acquired from the Rays in December, had a, quote, general cleanup of the rotator cuff and labrum in his shoulder in December. He's not expected back till near the All-Star break. Note about JP Feiereisen. So he was at FanFest wearing a number 45 jersey. On the back of his jersey, it had his full name, including his initials, with no period. So it said JP Feiereisen on the back of his jersey. So I went up and asked him about it because I looked. When he was on the Rays, he never had JP on the back. And I was like, what's up with the jersey? You know? And he's like, no, honestly, I thought they were messing with me because I'm the new guy. But it turns out someone who, like, just made the jersey just made an error. Like, he's only going to wear Feiereisen during the season. So sadly, the other sort of 60-day candidate is Alex Reyes himself, who might not be ready for the first few months. If you put someone on the 60-day injured list now, the earliest they can be activated is May 29th. I think all of these pitchers are not expected to pitch by then anyway, so it's not that big of a deal. I don't really know what Jimmy Nelson's status is as of yet. Well, he's missed like a season and a half, so he could very well be ready-ish. They could also have like a nesting situation like they did last year. Let's say, for example, Alex Reyes is signed first of this group. One of the other three pitchers goes on the 60-day IL to make room for him. And then, like, the next day or maybe later that day, Peralta's signed, and then Reyes goes on the 60-day IL. Last year they had they stacked three of them together. Jimmy Nelson was first. Dustin May went on the 60-day. Danny Duffy signed next with Nelson going on the 60-day. And then Duffy went on the 60-day to make room for Freddie Freeman. So three players in one roster spot. It was kind of – I'm always fascinated by that. But, you know, it doesn't always work out because if you look back, like, Duffy and Nelson, neither of them pitched for the Dodgers last year. So it's not like it's some, like, great advantage or anything. It's just one of these roster minutia things that I sort of love. But speaking of, like, just general minutia, baseball minutia – were you aware of the Joe West Wikipedia saga of the last week?
I'm a little more active on the baseball subreddit than you. I'm not the biggest Reddit fan, but I do quite enjoy the baseball subreddit, and this was definitely a winner.
So the user, I think, on Reddit was New York Metzelhead, which is a funny name. He did some research and found that a user on Wikipedia was editing the Joe West Wikipedia page, and the user who's editing had the handle Crew Chief 22. That happened. 22 happened to be West's number when he was an umpire. And it was a lot of just, you know, sort of correcting the record type stuff. And then I guess what Wikipedia has a policy where you can't, you're not allowed to like edit your own page because it's supposed to be crowdsourced, that sort of a thing. But in this Redditor's research, I believe on the page, I don't remember how he found this, but quotes from Crew Chief 22 included this.
There's Wikipedia has like a debate page where you can edits. Yeah.
And so this is one quote. Quote, "I constructively corrected the bullshit that was on this page," unquote. And then another one was, quote, "If you're going to leave my page, if you aren't going to leave my page alone, please remove it completely. I don't need anyone knowing anything about me, and I certainly don't need anyone reading things that are not true." So Ben Lindbergh on the Effectively Wild podcast mentioned this in one episode last week. Then at the same time, he reached out to the email address associated with Crew Chief 22, found out that it was, in fact, Joe West, and had Joe West on his next episode of the podcast. It was actually a wonderful interview. I enjoyed it very much. There was a few parts that were like laugh out loud funny. In fact, I forgot the reason they even brought it up, but Joe West, he's like, "You gotta understand, Rob Manfred hates Bob Nightingale." And he's just like, "What?" He's just kind of rambling at times, but it was great. It was a great interview. But among the things that Joe West corrected, which is still up incorrectly on both Baseball Reference and Retro Sheet, involves Oral Hershiser. And he broke Don Drysdale's scoreless inning streak. This was September 28th, 1988. Hershiser came in at 49 innings. He needed 10 full innings to break the record. It's a shutout after – it's 0-0 after 9 innings. So he went back for the 10th. Baseball Reference and Retro Sheet lists the home plate umpire as Charlie Williams with Joe West at first. However, it was West, in fact, behind the plate. Hershiser in the 10th, he struck out Marvell Wynn of the Padres to open the inning, but a wild pitch and it like bounced to the screen, which allowed Wynn to reach base. He got out of the inning unscathed, but describing that first play of the 10th, this is from Sam McManus's game recap in the LA Times from 88. Quote, "At first, I didn't think the guy swung. Then I saw plate umpire Joe West call it a strike, and I knew the guy was on first. I just told myself to bear down and go get them." So, yeah. So what this says is, you know, don't mess with Joe West. He knows what he's talking about on this stuff. So let him know. And I'm not sure because I haven't checked Joe West's wiki page in a little bit, but it sounds like Ben Lindbergh was making the case that because Joe West was on the podcast with talking about it with Ben Lindbergh, that can be used as a source for the wiki page itself rather than like Joe West directly. So I don't know if that's the case or not, but I just thought that was hilarious and it had a little Dodger kick. So I will link to that interview in the show notes.
But I think it's the funniest that it was Joe West, but it would almost be as funny if it was just a Joe West super fan.
Yeah, you know, the fact that there is a Joe West superfan, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then named Crew Chief 22 and just spends their day editing the Joe West Wikipedia page.
He has merchandise. You know, just like, So just a weird transition. I should have looked up Jimmy Nelson's career splits with Joe West as umpire, but instead I will tell you this. Jimmy Nelson in his 29 innings with the Dodgers has a 2.22 ERA plus. That's the seventh highest in franchise history among pitchers with at least 20 innings with the franchise. My question to you, who's in first place?
Crew Chief 22. Yep. I'll come up with a guess after this. Who has the highest ERA plus in the history of the Dodgers with at least 20 innings with the franchise?
What hints would you like?
I have one guess, and you tell me where they are on your list, and then I'll take some hints. How about that?
Sure.
Max Scherzer.
Scherzer's eighth on this list.
Okay.
So he's at 208 all in 2021.
Slacker.
198 ERA in 11 starts, 68 in the third innings. I will tell you, I have the top. It's everyone with an ERA plus of over 200 is on this list, and there's 10 of them. He has the second most innings of this group.
Okay.
I will say every pitcher but one on this list is in the 2000s. And in fact, eight of them are since 2010, basically.
Whew. That's a lot of modern pitchers.
I will give you another hint. Two, three, four, five of them are currently in major league camp with the Dodgers.
Okay. Evan Phillips.
Evan Phillips is number five. He has a 1.47 ERA and 73 in the third innings. Oh, I was mistaken with Scherzer. Scherzer has the third most innings. Evan Phillips has the second most innings on this group. He's at 2.85 ERA plus. Before we get into further answering here, I looked up Jimmy Nelson pitching with Joe West behind the plate. It's two starts. I think they were all with Milwaukee. 2015, 2016. He gave up 10 runs, 8 earned in 9 innings. So an 8 ERA with Joe West behind the plate.
Oh, Yency Almonte.
He's number two. So he set the Dodgers record for ERA last year. I take that back. He had the second best Dodgers ERA ever with at least 30 innings. He had 35 innings. 1.02. His ERA plus is 4.14 with the Dodgers currently. He's number two. I will tell you the person who has the better ERA, the best ERA, for a single season in this case, but also for career for this person, that person is below Almonte in ERA plus because of the year they did it. So,
I'm tapping out. Okay. I gave it a good shot.
Hank Aguirre is the one. He had a 0.69 ERA in 1968, but because it was the year of the pitcher, his ERA plus only 4.02. One person who was on the 2022 Dodgers but is not currently in camp because he signed elsewhere, Chris Martin, 2.90.
Looking at the list now.
Adam Kolarik, back as a non-roster invitee. His ERA 2019-2020 with the Dodgers, 0.88 in 30 and two-thirds innings, 4.96 ERA plus. So, yeah, the other current Dodgers, again, Jimmy Nelson, you mentioned Evan Phillips, Almonte, Kolarik, and Andre Jackson with a 2.02. Mr. Three-inning save himself, 21 and a third major league innings with the Dodgers, 2.11 ERA.
Definitely looking at the list, Takashi Saito was on my short list. I don't think I was going to – it totally makes sense not seeing it now that I know, but I would not have come up with Adam Kolarik.
By far the most innings of anyone on this list, 189 and two-thirds, 227 ERA plus. The Dodgers had no right having a closer as good as they had after Eric Gagne, but he was really good. He was so good.
It was fun. Definitely one of my favorite players from
those years. Like they call him like Smiling Sammy and stuff, like it's everything's good. It was all good, just a thoroughly enjoyable player.
Speaking of thoroughly enjoyable, It's time for Questions from Craig.
We love them.
Five questions, sort of. Some of them have sub questions from Craig Minami. Starting with
we love it. Oh, sorry, I'm a little late.
Wow, jeez Louise. You ready?
Yep.
Too bad, because I actually have to look. I have to pull up the answers real quick, because otherwise I won't get. This is my favorite part. Not just questions from Craig, but the trivia questions for you, because Craig gives me the answers, I get to sound smarter than I am. It's the Trebek effect. Although,
Trebek. No, sorry.
Clayton Kershaw made his debut on May 25th, 2008. And
that's true. I got it. I'm sorry.
And since 2008, the Dodgers lead the major leagues in regular season total wins, team ERA, and strikeouts per nine innings. To mark this anniversary, here are some questions about firsts for Clayton Kershaw. Question the first. The St. Louis Cardinals were the first team to face Kershaw, so multiple firsts were made against those Redbirds. Can Eric name the first player he struck out?
I believe it was the very first batter of the game, current Marlins manager Skip Schumacher.
Correct. Can Eric name the player who got the first hit? And for bonus points, was it a single or an extra base hit?
So I know for a fact of one hit. I just can't remember. I can't remember if it was an RBI hit or not, but I don't know who else got the hit before him, if so. So I will just say Albert Pujols with a double.
Correct. That was the first.
Okay.
And I'll say it was an RBI.
Must have walked someone.
Yeah. I'm not going to say who, because I think that player may come up. Maybe not. Maybe not, actually. Anyways, Kershaw was able to strike out two players twice in his first career start. Can Eric name those two players?
God. I don't remember him. Okay. I can't say I know exactly. I'm guessing he had at most seven strikeouts in this game.
I'll look.
But yeah, so. Okay, so it's 08 Cardinals. So I'm going to go. I want to say this person was later a non-roster guy with the Dodgers. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm. So I don't even know if this is true or if he was a Cardinal. But Brian Barton?
No. Who was the walk beforehand?
Oh, okay. So
but did not, I thought maybe he would come up on this question. He did not.
So I'm not totally off base. Who also wasn't totally off base? Brian Barton, because he walked. So this is 08. So this, the other person I'm thinking of was a contact person. What about Yadier Molina?
It is not Yadier Molina.
Okay, the only other thing I can think of is David Eckstein.
So I always thought it was David Eckstein was in this initial first five or so batters, and including strikeout. He's not. Skip Schumacher struck out twice.
I guess I should have guessed him. Yeah. I knew he had one.
And Ryan Lutwick.
Oh man.
I this is not a trivia question for Craig, but let you have one stab. Kershaw struck out three in that first inning. Do you know the other strikeout victim? It was Ludwig Schumacher and...
Oh, so it had to be obviously someone in what, the top five batters? So I'm trying to think. It was too early for Lance Berkman to be a Cardinal. It was so too late for Jim Edmonds. I don't know.
It is Troy Glaus.
Troy Glaus.
Noted Cardinal.
Troy so Glaus. I want to, because you mentioned Ryan Lutwick, I want to make sure I have this correct because it's one of the all-timer trades if you just think about it. So a little more than 2 years after this game, May 2008, in the trade deadline in 2010, Ryan Lutwick was traded as part of a three-team trade by the Cardinals to the Padres. First, I will say the Padres sent Nick Greenwood to the Cardinals. The Indians sent Jake Westbrook to the Cardinals, and the Padres sent Corey Kluber to Cleveland. Oops. That was some trade. That was wild.
Last question from Craig for you, yeah. And then we'll, actual questions. Clayton Kershaw committed his first, good luck, his first balk in 2009. Can Eric name the team that received that first balk? And for bonus, who was the runner on base that caused that free base?
Okay. I
really wish you just,
had it.
Like, yeah, you're, oh, yeah, obviously.
So I'm just going to, I don't have any clue, but I'm just going to have a guess. I will say, the Brewers and Ryan Braun.
It is the Angels and Eric with a K, Ibar.
Oof. All right.
That was almost going to be my hint. It was a sort of name twin to you.
Got it.
You ready? Ready sure. to move on? You did good, I think.
Decent, yeah.
Here's a question about listening to podcasts. Do each of you listen at regular speed, or do you speed it up? And if so, how much?
I cannot fathom anyone who listens to it on anything other than normal speed. In fact, I think that people who like listen to podcasts on, you know, higher or faster speeds should probably go to prison. Like that's probably like you, anytime you like adjust that setting in your podcast listener of choice, it should be a red flag that goes directly to the FBI. No, I don't know. I just can't. It bothers me for some reason. I don't know why. It's do what you want, obviously. But I can't do it in anything other than normal speed.
I normally do normal speed, but depending mm-hmm. on, there are certain podcasts where I'm listening more to like ingest information quickly. Sure. And then in that case, I'm not really there to enjoy it. And then I can go up to maybe as fast as 1.5, but usually like 1.3 kind of.
Yeah.
Anything faster than that, it's just, it's too hard for my brain.
I will tell you, I listen to the True Blue LA podcast at zero speed because I don't like the sound of my own voice. Yeah.
0.1 speed just because you really like it. It starts sounding like humpback whales at that point.
Yeah.
Last week, LeBron James scaled a 39-year-old record to become the all-time leading NBA scorer. If you look at all the baseball's records, most seem out of reach except for maybe career home runs. Giancarlo Stanton has hit 378 home runs entering his age 33 season, and Mike Trout has 350 home runs in his age 31 season. Do either of you agree? That's the question. Do either of you agree that if any major baseball record is broken, it would be home runs? And do you think there is a current player that could do it?
Yeah, I was looking at this. I was trying to see, like, if it's just funny, like, it's crazy how close Albert Pujols got in RBIs to Hank Aaron at the top. Right. But you look at, like, you know, walks, Barry Bonds, like, just kind of obliterated that. But I was looking, I think among – he's at, like, 2,500 and something. There's, like, a couple active people at, like, 1,300, but they're, like, all super old. So, like, nobody has – basically nobody has even half of that. But then, like, you know, Ricky Henderson steals obviously out of reach. It might as well be like Cy Young's win total. But even like in terms of like strikeouts, Kershaw's probably – he might get to 3,000 depending on how long he pitches. But even that is 2,700 behind Nolan Ryan, you know, that kind of a thing. So double – like there's really not – like hits – you know, maybe someone – did you know Elvis Andrus has 1,997 hits? I was shocked by that when I saw that earlier. Not to say he's going to have any records or anything, but, like, just getting to 3,000 is one thing. But then you're, like, 1,250-something behind Pete Rose. So, like, I think it's got to be home runs just looking at this. And Stanton, like, he's so injury prone. Obviously, Mike Trout is too. Like, Stanton seems more so. Stanton is obviously more likely to have a few years where he just goes off, but he kind of has to have those pretty soon here to, like, at least get him to that. So, like, even if he goes to age 40, right? Like, I think over his last 8 years, he's had two very injury plagued, very low home run total years during that eight, but he had 224 home runs. So, if you do that, that means through his age 40 season, he'd have 602. So he'd still be over 150 away from the record. So that's tough. I think you got to go with Mike Trout because he's 2 years younger. Obviously also injury prone, but I think he has at least a shot at it. You know, again, if he hits what, like 35 a year for the next 9 years, that's 315. So he'd be at 665 through age 40. No, I'm sorry. He has 10 years since he's entering his age 31 season. So he'd be at 700 at age 40. So, like, if he can be close to that, it's at least reasonably close. So, yeah, I think it's got to be home runs. I have a hard time seeing, like, other records. And plus, like, even if it is some other record, if it was, like, doubles or triples, and even those are, like, out of reach, none of them have the, like, cachet as, like, home runs. Maybe hits does. Maybe if someone had, like, runs scored. But even that, like, Ricky Henderson's super high.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of the big important, quote-unquote important numbers are any as likely to be broken as home runs is. And even that is seems like a long shot.
Lead off two-run home runs. How about that?
Yeah, Edwin Rios, the first.
A number of Dodgers are participating in the World Baseball Classic this spring.
This year? No, I'm
kidding. That includes Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Clayton Kershaw, and Julio Urias. But also both Will Smith and Austin Barnes will be away from working in spring training games and bullpens with their pitchers. What impact, if any, will that have, and does this mean a big opportunity for Diego Cartaya to impress the Dodgers coaching staff?
Yeah, so, like, he's on the 40-man, right? So he's already in big league camp. He's probably going to start the year in Double A. I'm sure he'll get in some, like, game action and things, but, yeah, that's going to be interesting. I'd like to see how much he does, like, in game action, because so the pool play is, like, March 11th to the 15th, but the WBC, like, players, they'll start doing, like, workouts with their teams around, like, I think they leave, like, on March 6th. So you're basically, like, a week and a half out, even for the teams who don't advance. Like, and Team USA, good chance of advancing. You figure Team Mexico is probably going to be at least be in there. Venezuela might be with, like, Miguel Rojas, but, like, in terms of the catchers, it's Will Smith's on Team USA, Barnes is on Team Mexico. So those are the two teams I'm thinking about for this. But, like, they're going to be gone for, like, at least a week and a half, possibly, like, 2+ weeks. So that's some time to get, I mean, just by virtue of, like, who's left in camp, because the Dodgers have three non-roster catchers. It's Hunter Fiducia, and then two veterans in, like, David Freitas and Patrick Mazika. I would guess Cartaya is going to catch a fair bit. Like, even if he doesn't catch a ton in games, he's going to be catching bullpens. He's going to be being in the room, like, with the coaches and, like, planning stuff and things like that. So I think just that's going to be pretty good experience-wise for him. And he wasn't, like, a non-roster guy before anyway. So this is, like, his first real time in Major League camp. So I think it's going to be a lot to take in. But, yeah, I think it's going to be – he'll get some opportunity. I think it's just going to be interesting in general how even with some of the pitching gone and some of the position players, like, competing, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for guys who might be up at some point. Like, Michael Busch is going to probably get some playing time. James Outman will get, like, more playing time, that sort of a thing. So I think it's going to be an interesting, like, couple weeks there when some of the big names are gone.
Before we get to the final question, I kept looking to find an Alex Trebek quote where he talks about having the answers, but I must just be thinking of the SNL skit
with my reference. I think he's talked about that before, but I couldn't find the quote.
Yeah.
Perfectly comes to mind.
Yeah. All right. L Times recently did a story comparing the Sam's Club $1.38 hot dog and drink combo to Costco's $1.50. Their favorite was the one that cost 12 cents less. My question is, do you have a favorite combo meal to get when you're on the go? And Eric, did your time at In-N-Out include their inclusion of their now popular combo deals?
So when Craig first asked this, I immediately went to the second part about In-N-Out, but I didn't think of a favorite combo meal. So do you want to answer your part of that first?
Mine is number one, ketchup mustard instead of the spread, animal style with a whole grill. A whole grill I'll do about half the time, I would say. Half whole grill. And other than that, not really, you know, it kind of just depends on what I'm feeling. To buy you time, I will note I went to a Quick Trip, our beloved Quick Trip, yesterday. Quick Trip. And I bought a sandwich, a drink, and chips, just because that's what sounded good. And I got a fountain drink, and I normally don't, but I
sure.
Fountain Coke Zero sounded good. Got it up, and it rained in at like a dollar more than the sandwich, and I was baffled. And I was like, I have ripped the store off. The chips should be like $1.50. The drink is $1.
You ran out.
I know. I literally went back in after I went to my car. I'm like, hey, did I miss something? Did you forget to ring it up? He's like, no, it's a unstated combo, apparently, if you buy a fountain drink, a brand of the chips that I happen to get, and a sandwich.
Amazing. So you lucked into a combo.
There's my favorite combo. The Quick Trip sandwich soda.
Okay, so I'm going to... I will still answer the first part, but I will go to the second part first, because I will note that the combo meal at In-N-Out doesn't give you a discount. It's just a way for... bozos to make ordering easier, basically.
I'm sure that is the biggest reason why they implement. I wonder how much of it is people, you know, maybe they went in not really wanting a drink. We're like, oh, I gotta get a combo. they have them.
I think that's part of it. So I worked in and out from 93 to 95. It was like part of my junior year.
I was seven.
So you worked there like 2 years later. Right?
I was behind the fry machine. Yeah.
So then all summer between junior, senior year, and then all of senior year, and then into the summer before college, and then I was at Smart and Final in college. But when I came back after freshman year, between freshman and sophomore year of college, I went back in and out. So I was doing two jobs. So like 93 to 95, roughly. I don't remember them having the combo meals when I was there, but also I worked at a time in and out where the employees had to pour all the drinks. There was no self-serve drinks, so that was a thing. But yeah, they famously don't offer discount. I looked, my local In-N-Out it's the same today. Obviously, the prices are higher, but it's the exact same price as if you ordered everything separately. It was that way. Well, yeah, like I said, I don't remember having a combo at that time.
It was still cash only, right?
No. Wait.
Didn't start taking credit card, because I remember there was always an ATM.
That's a good question. Actually, I think you're right. Yeah, we didn't. Okay, this is speaking of a tangent here. So around that same time, I was working at Smart and Final, and when I first started at Smart and Final I want to say this was at either the Cathedral City or the Indio store in the Palm Springs area. I just remember we had, we didn't even take credit cards yet. Within like a year, we did. But I remember this one lady was so indignant. She wanted to use a credit card, and we only took cash or check at the time. And we had that like machine you'd run the check through to make sure it's not like fake or something. But I just remember my manager was so smug to the lady, and he goes, "We're doing just fine, ma'am." You know, like without taking credit cards. It's like what a small minded man. It's hilarious.
2005 is when they started taking credit cards.
Wow. Wait, with Smart and Final? No. Oh, In-N-Out. So, before I get more into In-N-Out in a second, I will say, so I don't associate In-N-Out with having a combo meal, even though what I usually get there incorporates everything. With that, I don't order it like that. So the ones that come to mind are, it's either the three taco meal at Taco Bell. I don't like the Supreme. I think that's their number one, but I don't like sour cream. So I just get the like three regular tacos.
I do not like sour cream.
Because it's terrible. But here's the deal. I like just about every like chip dip that is sour cream based. So I'm not super anti, but I just don't like it generally, especially on tacos. But the other thing is probably at Del Taco, I probably will give them the higher mark on this because they have crinkle fries, which are great. But I think my go-to there is probably the chicken soft taco meal. Two chicken soft tacos, fries, and
which has sour cream.
Not when you order with no sauce and then put hot sauce on it. So Yeah.
That's the whole point of the chicken saw tacos. It's the one that comes with sour cream.
No, the key there is if you they will add green sauce to it, and it's way better that way. So.
Whatever.
But back to In-N-Out story. When I worked there, just to like show how old I am, Double Double was $2.30. Today it's $5.15. A cheeseburger was $1.50. A hamburger was $1.35. The differences between things were very regimented and easy to memorize, which helped because as someone who worked there, I worked almost entirely the register or the drive-through. So it was 80 cents to add a patty, 15 cents for cheese. Drinks were 65 cents for a small, which is freaking hilarious. 80 cents for a medium and 95 cents for a large. Fries were 80 cents. So you had this like you're just sort of putting stuff together. And it's very easy to figure out what the totals were because you're kind of working with the same base system. There's a lot of adding 80 cents here and there. So I work the register a lot. And especially like by the time before I was 18, I believe the rule was you couldn't work more than 4 hours on a school night, I guess. So I had to like usually be off by 9 because our shifts didn't start till like 5. But once I turned 18, they're like, you'd work until 1 tonight. I said, okay. So, and which happens sometimes. So sometimes there might be two of us super late. One person's doing the grill. I'm like doing all the register stuff, but no one's in the store. So I'm like, I'm in
the store at that time. I'll let you know.
I might be cleaning like a table or something. But I'm walking around. Then I hear someone in the drive-thru. I had the headset on. So I'm like, okay, I'll take your order. And then. Because I knew what the amounts were and what the usual tax was, I would quote them their exact total. And the person who's like cooking the food, they have a headset. So it's not like they're missing out. They know what to make. And I go to the thing and I was always right to the penny because I was a nerd. But yeah, so that was my little fun thrill at In-N-Out. It was my way to showing off. Is that a thing? No one cared. They didn't know about it. Like they didn't know I was pulling this off. So
you should have told them.
It was like basically for one other person in the store. But yeah, can you imagine? That'll be $4.20, ma'am. And yeah, I knew what it was. Like
I didn't even calculate. Yeah,
they just drive off. Like what?
And then you get a burger. It's great.
Ooh, well, that's
hungry.
So, you know what?
You know, there are In-N-Outs in Salt Lake City, and I have a work conference there later in April. So
I thought you were going to say, so I'm going to drive there right now. That's pretty solid. I have an In-N-Out a few blocks from me, and I am considering driving there after we're done recording.
I'll live vicariously through you. It'll be wonderful.
Yeah. We should get sponsored by In-N-Out, by the way.
I mean, you have the end. You're a former employee.
Yeah. I wish I still had my safety pin. But that's it for us today.
When are we recording again?
Soonish. Probably we'll have at least one more episode this month, which means probably recording next week. And yeah, that'll do it for us today. Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you again next week-ish. All right.